Welcome to The Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
All right, guys, so we are recording right after the Pistons. Pretty exciting and rather eventful 118-112 victory over the Brooklyn Nets. But Blake, really quickly, before we even talk about that, you had a pretty incredible opportunity to interview one of the Pistons' newest players. Why don't you give everyone a little preview of that interview?
Yeah. So for those of you that are checking into DetroitBadBoys.com, I released a piece earlier this week on Buddy Boeheim. I got to attend Cruz practice last week, interviewed him there, and just wrote an article about it. It's funny, I was actually thinking about doing this before he even got that two-way deal, just because he's had a pretty incredible season in the G League, shooting-wise, improving other aspects of his game. And then the day before I released the article, he hit a pretty improbable game-winning three-pointer that is just nuts. If no one has seen it, you got to look that clip up. But I'll drop the link to the article in the chat for anyone that's with us now. Anyone listening to the live recording, you can find it over on DetroitBadBoys.com. And also a little teaser, I did interview another Cruise player, Nate Knight, who he's not on any sort of deal with the Pistons, but he's played over 100 NBA games with the Timberwolves and the Atlanta Hawks. So I have that coming at some point next week. For anyone that's interested, it'll be on DetroitBadBoys.com as well. But yeah, we have a really exciting game to talk about. The Pistons got a win, number 10 of the season, finally in double digits. So,
double digits.
Wes, what are your initial thoughts on the win tonight?
Well, really quickly, before we hit that, I want to make sure I get the housekeeping things out of the way because I was a bad host last week. So we do have some transaction news. All right. Shake Milton was bought out. He eventually went and signed with the New York Knicks. And then just recently, Taj Gibson was signed to a 10-day contract per Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN. So the game. That was a pretty wild up and down roller coaster of a night. I mean, the first quarter, it looked a lot better than it was. I think the Pistons scored maybe 25, 28 total points in that quarter, but they weren't getting it because they were, you know, really hot or really efficient. They were still turning the ball over quite a bit, still missing a lot of shots. The Nets were just kind of sleepwalking. And then they recovered, and that's when that became a much more interesting game. So obviously there was a lot of back and forth. What did you make out of that, you know, transition out of the second quarter when things honestly were looking pretty dicey and a little bit lackadaisical, and into the third quarter where, you know, it seemed like the group really turned it around?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was big for them overall just to get out to that huge first quarter lead. They let the Nets come back into it. I mean, the Nets, like you said, sort of woke up and started shooting the three ball. Turnovers were also an issue for the Pistons. But I mean, I just thought it was big in general for them to find a way to just stick in this one and find a way to pull it out. I think it's huge for a young group like this that has been going through so many changes. And we've seen time and time again them be in these close games and really not sort of just fall apart at the end, like the wheels come off and it results in yet another loss. So big for them to see this one. Also just like huge bounce back game from Jaden Ivey. He's been struggling from three. He went 6 for 9 tonight and scored 34 points. So just went crazy. So I thought it was great for him overall and just like big for the entire group to just find a way to get one.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me read off some of the stats from some of the highlight players. Obviously, Cade Cunningham, probably the headliner, 32 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds, 38 minutes too. He played quite a bit. And actually, I think you'll notice almost all of the starters played pretty high minutes. Jaden Ivey, 39 minutes, 34 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds, like you mentioned, really broke out of that slump from three. And Asar Thompson with You know what? What I thought might have been his best offensive game of the year. The numbers aren't going to jump out, but he was really efficient and really decisive as well. He had 14 points, 3 assists, and 7 rebounds. You know, what did you make out of Asar Thompson? We even saw a little bit of a heat check three there in the third quarter that probably shouldn't have taken, but hey, he was having a night.
You know what's funny with Asar Thompson is, like, I was always the one that sort of like believed in the shot. And I feel like it got to a point this season where I was like, yeah, I don't know if it's ever going to get there. I think this might just be what it is. And he's really, like, I mean, I don't think we can say he's a good shooter by any means at this point, but we've seen him knock down threes in big moments in the past few games and really just seemed to be improving here. He got up 7 threes against the Nets, which I think is big for someone like him who is not really getting checked on the perimeter, still having the confidence to put those shots up. Like you said, Wes, he made one and then hit he didn't hit it, but he took a three heat check three at the other end. So I like at least that he's still getting shots up, because I feel like when you're going through shooting struggles or just like trying to improve as a shooter in general, confidence is a huge thing. Not to go back to my article, but that's one thing that Buddy Boeheim mentioned, just like taking everything so seriously and acting like you're in the game. And if you're like confidence dips a little bit or you don't have it, you're hesitating, you're kind of already done. So I like that he's went through struggles and he's at least like improving. Has a long way to go, but at least we're seeing something.
Yeah, you know, I was going to want to caution a little bit on it too. I mean, he did, so he went 2 for 7. I think we could pretty reasonably throw out at least one. There was another one that was kind of a late shot clock heave that, you know, he really didn't have much choice in taking. And then the heat check that you mentioned where he just shouldn't have taken it, even though he did. But so he goes 2 for 7. The one thing I will say is that I think his makes are starting to look better. His shot's slowly becoming just a little bit more fluid. It's less, you know, two motion and rickety for lack of a better word. And so I think that is probably, like you mentioned, a function of him being more confident in it. He still really shouldn't be taking 7 threes. In any situation, you know, and he should never be taking a heat check. Like there are still some things where I feel like we got to draw some boundaries on what he's doing, but it is nonetheless incredibly encouraging that the two that he made were pure. There was smooth off the catch and he was confident taking it. Mm-hmm. Like that's really big for a guy who's been at like 18%. Almost all season.
Yeah. And like, it's still, I guess mechanically, like his jumper, just like from three, doesn't look super, I guess, like natural or smooth to me in general. But I mean, just the fact that you can like see some go through, because we all saw he went through those stretches where he wasn't even hitting anything close to the rim. And like, I just can't even imagine like what those do to confidence. Like it makes you cringe when you're watching it. So I can't even imagine like just being there and like going through it yourself. So I mean, I think it's huge at least to just see a couple go in here and there. The volume is a little bit more than you would want, especially when you're in a tight game like this, but at least it's not like a total goose egg, you know?
All right, let's talk about what I thought was probably the best thing that he did on offense all night. And that was how decisively he got to the rim, either on cuts or on rip and goes, right? He's still not being really ran at when he catches the ball at the three-point line, but guys are taking a step towards him. And there's a little bit of a Jaden Ivey thing going on where he's just so athletic where that one step is all he needs if he goes right away. And that's what he did against the Nets. I mean, he had the that poster dunk over Claxton that looked pretty great. I think he took off from you know, maybe a foot inside the free throw line. He flew through the air. But on that cut, it was hard. It was fast. And he was really decisive with it. I think him starting to feel his spots, you know, better like this, where he's comfortable making those quick reads, that's really going to help him score the 14 points that he did against the Nets. I mean, there's no free throws there either. So 4 out of his 6 makes were at the rim. And honestly, I think that's pretty repeatable, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, what you said about just being decisive, like, I think decision-making is something that it comes along eventually for younger guys, but it's something that a lot of them struggle with. And just the athleticism that Assar has, like, was really the just like prime skill that both him and his brother, you could look to and be like, we really have something with these guys. Like, he can do things that not many players can on the floor or in the league. So I think if he can just pair that with an ability to make good decisions, then he can definitely get to the rim and like make the other team pay. You brought up Nick Claxton. He was clearly getting under Nick Claxton's skin, like, the whole game, which was nice to see for a rookie. He did turn the ball over 3 times, so I don't think he's anything close to like an extremely polished decision maker. There's still mistakes to tighten up, but you can definitely see the vision, at least, which is huge for a player at his age.
Well, and let's, you know, quickly, let's hit on the turnovers and then circle this back into a little bit more conversation about Assar, because we did get a question about him that I want to bring up here. Turnovers. Assar Thompson had 3, like you mentioned. Cade Cunningham had 5. Jaden Ivey, 4. Everyone off the bench, only a couple people had 1. All right. Fontecchio had 1. Fournier had 1. And Wiseman had 1. The other 7 turnovers that accounted for the 22 total that the team had for the night were Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren. Stewart had 4 and Duren had 3. So honestly, to me, I thought there was a little bit of a, you know, blessing and a curse within these numbers. The guys that you expect to have more turnovers because they are handling the ball so much, that being Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, and Assar Thompson now too. He's getting a lot more ball handling reps. Those guys had between them 12 turnovers, so that's over half. All right. And like I said, that's expected. All your veterans off the bench, they took care of the ball really well in their minutes. And then you had the really unfortunate front court turnovers by guys that really aren't dribbling the ball all that much. And truthfully, a lot of those turnovers came with them trying to pass between each other in high-low actions that probably weren't necessarily there, right, at the time. You know, it's good. I want to say that it's good that the majority of these turnovers were by the guys that are handling the ball the most, right? You didn't have too many rogue ones. At the same time, the rogue ones that you did have were pretty killer. It was 7 of them. And that number should, at a minimum, be cut in half.
Yeah. And the thing, like, I feel like when I look at the turnovers, I kind of give Cade and Ivy a little bit, maybe even more of a break than I should. But just like you said, they're your primary ball handlers. Like, they're going to turn the ball over at certain points. So I always just really focus on the turnovers that we've seen from Jalen Duren. Like, we saw 4 turnovers from Isaiah Stewart tonight, 3 from Assar Thompson, just finding ways to limit those. A lot of the ones that I saw were just like pretty careless, like throwaways or offenses just stalled and you got into making like a bad decision. So I hope that there's some sort of solution. We just haven't really seen it yet. And the thing that's killer about them is like, the ones that are like backbreakers where they just like throw the ball away, someone makes a wrong read and no one's there. I did notice like a couple points tonight where after those, they were like slower to get back on defense. It didn't necessarily result in the Nets getting like points or anything like that, but it resulted in them getting good looks just because the defense was scrambling or maybe a little bit slower to get back because they were just like their back was broken by that turnover and they were upset about it. So just got to figure that out. Like you turnover, I think they had 12 turnovers at half. They averaged something around 16 a game, which is the top towards the top two or three in the league. I think if you just limit the turnovers from guys who are not your primary ball handlers, at least you can get somewhere where you can get by in these games without always looking like, oh, they're turning the ball over 12 times and a half again, and that's why they let the other team back in it. So I'm hoping it's something that can be clearly fit if it's this year or next year. But yeah, it's just, I just keep looking to like Durin and Stewart and trying to like limit them turning the ball over in the ways that they have.
Well, you bring up a really good point. I think we ought to touch, I think we need to touch on it before getting to this question here. And that's that, look, you know, your lead ball handlers in Cunningham, Ivy, and to a certain extent, Asar Thompson right now, they're all very young. And those young ball handlers are going to turn the ball over. Okay. That comes with the territory of being young players in the NBA. What that means for the rest of your roster is that you have a much slimmer margin for error because, you know, Cunningham, Ivy, and Asar Thompson together had 12 turnovers. You mentioned it. The Pistons on average are at 16. That's the second worst in the NBA. That means you had, in order to hit your average, four turnovers that you could have allowed from everybody else on the roster. Now, the bench held up their end of the bargain. The starting power positions didn't, right? And again, those guys are pretty young too, so maybe a little bit of grace. But at the same time, the important part is that margin of error is so slim right now. And I think that's probably, at this point in the season, driving the high turnover numbers more than anything else, because you really have seen Cade, for example, cut down on the really dumb passes. I mean, the worst turnover he had against the Nets was in the fourth quarter late when he tried a low post entry to Jalen Duren. And that one may not have even necessarily been his fault because Duren didn't seal it all that well. It just was a pass that you probably shouldn't have made, should have gone somewhere else instead of to Duren in the post with 5 seconds left on the clock, right? They've cut down on the dumb ones, for lack of a better descriptor. But the number is still going to be high because they're young. And that just makes it so much harder for everyone else.
Yeah, 100%. And like, again, like I feel like I really need to just not fully absolve like Cade and Ivy of it. Because Cade did turn the ball over 5 times tonight. Some of them might not have been his fault, like you said. But like that 5 number is what we were seeing at the beginning of the year when a huge topic that we were discussing was Cade turning the ball over. So would like to see him somewhere in that 2 to 3 range per game, again, knowing he's going to turn it over. But yeah, just when you have your like 4 and 5 turning the ball over multiple times a game from putting the ball on the deck, whether it's an offensive foul, whatever it is, like, you just can't have that. Like, you can't have those guys, I guess, ending possessions and allowing other teams to get out quickly in transition when they may not be able to get back as quickly as they would have, which just results in points. Like, luckily, it didn't lead to a loss tonight, but those are things when they have been losing these games, you look to and you're like, okay, that's something we can take away from this. And if Duren doesn't turn it over at all or turns it over once, like maybe it's a totally different game. And not to pick on Jalen Duren, just using him as an example.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to just make sure I'm clear because clearly I probably should have presented this better. I'm not saying in any way that the five turnovers that Cade had were anyone's fault but his.
Of course.
I was saying that the dumb turnover that he threw in the late fourth quarter was probably a 50-50 split. Like, the ball shouldn't have been thrown, but if Durant sealed off better, it wouldn't have been a turnover for him. It probably would have been a shot clock violation overall.
100%.
Still bad. So I should have been a lot clearer on that. Let's get into this question here, because this is a good one. We're talking about Asar Thompson's having probably his best offensive game of the year, at least in terms of how he played, not necessarily the number. And he was still fantastic on the defensive end all game. Base Pistons on Twitter says, what would it take for Asar Thompson to move back into the top five of the Rookie of the Year ladder? And that's the Rookie of the Year ladder, I believe, by NBA.com.
Yeah, and I just pulled this up on the side. So the current rookie ladder that was released, I believe, yesterday with stats through March 5th is 1, Victor Wembanyama, 2, Chet Holmgren, 3, Brandon Miller, 4, Jaime Jaquez, and 5, Brandon Pajemski. Just to briefly touch on the next 5, you have Keontae George, Derek Lively, Cam Whitmore, and then Asar Thompson at 9 with his brother Amen just quickly following. I honestly think it would take a lot for Asar to get into that top 5. Like, if you're like, I don't think he's really going to, I'm just going to throw Wemby and Chet out. Like, they're always going to be in it. Like, he's not going to crack a guy like Brandon Miller. Jaime Jaquez is playing a pretty big role on a good team. Same with Brandon Pajemski. I don't really know, like, if there is a path for Asar to get there necessarily. And I don't think that's necessarily a product of what he's doing, because he's doing incredible things on the court and he contributed to a win for the Pistons tonight. But even like a guy like Keontae George, who's at 6, has been playing out of his mind. Derek Lively is playing in a huge role for a playoff team. I just think it's going to be difficult. But if he can, like, when he was towards the top of the rookie ladder at the beginning of the season, I think a lot of it, like, he never went off for a crazy amount of points. Like, a lot of it was what he was doing defensively, like the blocks and steals that he was getting. If the Pistons make a, like, I don't want to say a run, but if they could string together some wins, I think he can move towards at least that 6-7 range. But I just think a little bit of a product of the team he's on is going to make it really, really difficult for him to crack that top 5 that has a ton of good rookies that are playing in meaningful roles on playoff teams this year.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing, unfortunately. And then I'd add to that, you know, listen, I understand that this is, you know, meant to be a bit of a power ranking so that it's fluid throughout the season. But at the same time, it's a national thing. Okay, right? So a lot of that, the guys that are in the discussion for the top 5 are more or less decided by the All-Star break. Because you make your first impression, you back it up, and then you're in. And that's kind of how these things go when you're dealing with, you know, it's not a national writer's fault that they're not paying super close attention to the Detroit Pistons in March when they just now won their 10th game. Like, you can't really blame them for that. But that's the hurdle that Asar Thompson has in front of him. So, you know, truthfully, for him, what would it take? He'd need to start doing things that Asar Thompson doesn't do, like scoring 30 points a night and, you know, getting a bunch of triple doubles. You know, like, he'd have to start doing those things. And one, it's not reasonable for us to expect that out of him. And two, even if he did, he still might not crack it just with the way things are. So I don't think it's possible, even though he's had a fantastic rookie year.
Yeah, and one quick thing, that now that I'm looking at this latest rookie ladder, and just a shout out, Steve Ashburner, who wrote it, he called out that Asar shot 14.5% from three through January. Since February 1st, he's up to 28.6%. So I think that is really what helped him sort of get back in this conversation. After the last ladder they released, Definitely. He was tied for number 10. So now he's in number 9. So moving up a bit, maybe like the path for him to at least move up, not necessarily like crack the top 5, is like, he's averaging 8.8 points per game and 6.4 rebounds per game on the season through, not including this most recent game against the Nets. So maybe if he can, like, I don't know, get close to averaging a double double in the remaining games, like maybe that's a path for him to at least move up. But I think it's going to be really difficult just based on the other names that are here and the team that Ausar is playing for.
And of course, you know, a lot of that early season hype was driven by the flashy defensive plays he was making, right? All of the blocks, all the steals, like you mentioned. He's still getting a lot of those, but now they're just a little bit more routine. Early on in the season, he was doing it with a little extra force that you get with a rookie with those fresh legs. Yeah. So, you know, okay, maybe he starts getting the flashy stuff again and he'll shift up a few spots. Like you said, I'm still not expecting top five. So, all right, this is from Christopher Franks. He says, Evan Fournier's minutes, could we give them to someone else? Stanley Amude, maybe.
This is tough because, like, I've kind of liked what I've seen from Evan Fournier. And it's funny because when all the moves were made at the deadline, like, he was the one name that stuck out to me that I thought probably it either would be out of the rotation or not on the roster once the moves we made went above the amount of guys you're able to have on the roster. But he's stuck around. I think he's provided some good minutes. I mean, he didn't do a ton against the Nets, but he still made, like, he got a steal, which made, like, a pretty nice play on defense. And the team needs shooting. He was 0 for 1 from 3 against the Nets, but I think he's a guy that you can go to in a team that was, like, looking to have veteran presence on the floor, and all of a sudden they, like, really don't have much of that. You still have Troy Brown Jr. on the bench, who was a DNP CD against the Nets, and you bring in Taj Gibson for the 10-day. So you have those guys, but other than that, like, it's really like Evan Fournier as your vet. So maybe they want at least one of those guys on the floor, and Fournier's the guy. I do think giving someone like Stanley Amude minutes is interesting. He's played well in the G League this year and has showed flashes for the Pistons. So as we get later on in the last 20 games of the season, maybe you do give younger guys an opportunity to show something. We don't know what's going to happen after Taj Gibson's 10-day. Maybe they bring some other interesting name that's a younger player to bring in and see if they can show something. So in short, to like answer this question in terms of Fournier's minutes, I think they could give them to someone else, but I don't know if they necessarily will.
Well, I don't know if they really should. You mentioned that you've kind of liked how he's looked. I have too. The defense hasn't been as bad as advertised coming to Detroit out of New York. And let me just read off what he's been averaging with Detroit since the trade deadline. All right. 8.9 points on 37.5% from three in just under 19 minutes per game. Like, all year we've been clamoring that, hey, they need floor spacers. Well, he's shooting that percentage on 4.5 attempts off the bench in not a lot of minutes. He had 12 against the Nets, wasn't his best night, but he had a couple really nice defensive plays as well. Like, I think he's been solid for what he is. And that's a guy off the bench that, like you mentioned, veteran presence, stabilizing guy, and then shoots a lot of threes. And that's pretty much what you expect to get out of Evan Fournier. And that's what you do get out of Evan Fournier right now, at least if he keeps this up. So, you know, I don't see any reason to even shift those minutes to you know, a guy that you sign off the street. Like he helps out guys like Marcus Sasser, Jaden Ivey, James Wiseman, who, by the way, had a really nice night against the Nets. We didn't get to touch on that, but Fournier helps him out. You know, just his veteran presence and his shot making off the catch, it really helps a lot of these young guys out. It gives them an outlet when they drive. It gives them these one more passes to boost up some easy assists and get some more confidence. I mean, that's a really important role. And you can definitely trust Evan Fournier to play it. So I don't think he should lose many minutes at all.
Yeah, and another thing with a guy like him, like you mentioned, he helps out some other players. Like Simone Fontecchio didn't really get it going at all against the Nets. I think they sort of planned to defend him in a certain way, which resulted in mm-hmm. him not really being able to get going. But like Jaden Ivey has struggled from three lately. He was 6-for-9 against the Nets. But if there is a night where he's struggling from deep or a team is really like guarding Fontecchio closely, like Fournier is a guy you can go to and at least like trust to get up some shots, whether they're falling that night or not. I'm with you there. I think his minutes haven't been a negative by any means, which I wasn't necessarily expecting when he came to Detroit.
Oh, me either.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see it really falling in the near future unless the season gets to a point where they really do want to shut some guys down and give like the Stanley Amudes of the world just some like run in the final 10 to 15 games or whatever it is.
All right, let's jump over to this one here from Hero Ball in the DBB comments section. They're asking, based on analytics, what lineup gets this team the most wins moving forward? So this is obviously a little bit open-ended. We both took a different metric that we rated it on, and I think we both came to the same answer. So why don't you go first?
We did, which was funny that our minds were in the same place, just got there a little differently. But yeah, I think the lineup that we both came to is Cade, Ivy, Duren, Fontecchio, and Ausar Thompson. The way I went to with this was just looking at the net rating of five-man lineups. I looked at lineups that have played 100 or more minutes together, and that one that I just called out has a net rating of 2.2. So if you're looking at the starting group, really what that does is puts in Fontecchio in place of Isaiah Stewart. If you look at the five-man lineup with Stewart instead of Fontecchio, that net rating drops down to minus 10.9. So that's like a huge delta. And I think it talks to some of the spacing concerns that we've talked about. We know like Isaiah Stewart can shoot, but he's not necessarily getting the defensive attention on the perimeter that someone like Fontecchio would. And then when you have guys like Ausar Thompson and Jalen Duren in the starting lineup that aren't really known for shooting the three, we've seen how that can hinder what Cade and Ivy are able to do. I think that five with Fontecchio in place of Stewart and the rest of the quote unquote core four is the lineup that you look to when you think analytically what lineup can get us the most wins moving forward. And what's the most interesting about it to me is like for the net rating to be positive, like their defensive rating isn't horrible. Like I think the discussion of Stewart in place of Fontecchio is really defensive minded. You can't say enough about what Isaiah Stewart brings on the defensive end of the floor. But like we've said in the past, like bringing in Fontecchio instead of Stewart and maybe playing Stewart as your backup five in place of Duren doesn't drop the team's floor defensively, I think, as much as people would think. And the reason that this lineup isn't getting as much run as it did when Isaiah Stewart was out.
Well, and it doesn't drop that much because Fontecchio's a pretty dang good defender. Mm-hmm. Like he's not Bojan. We've talked about it before. He's not a traffic cone out there. He uses his length well. He's strong, and he's a pretty decent rebounder for his size. And when you're starting Jalen Duren and Asar Thompson, I'm not all that worried about rebounding. Those guys are pretty dang good at it, right? So the fact that, you know, Stewart is a better defender, yes, and Stewart is a better rebounder, yes. Fontecchio is a much better offensive player, and that gap is larger than the gap between Stewart defensively and Fontecchio defensively. You know, I think you could also make an argument just based on fit of, you know, inserting Isaiah Stewart for either of Jalen Duren or Asar Thompson if you're just purely trying to all we care about is winning games right now. I could imagine that lineup being fairly solid. That lineup hasn't gotten many minutes. We did see it a little bit against the Nets with Stewart playing the five as Jalen Duren went into some foul trouble. And honestly, it did look pretty good. But overall, if we're just going to look at lineups that have been getting minutes and analytically what would be their best bet, it's that exact one that you brought up. And I'll add that I got to it by looking at the net effective field goal percentage, which is just an efficiency metric. And it looks at what your team is doing efficiency-wise versus what the other team is doing. And that lineup is just about neutral, which is the best lineup that doesn't include players no longer on the team.
Yeah, and also the interesting thing when we're talking about, like, analytically what lineups will lead to the most wins, like, we both got to a lineup that is obviously going to be our starting five. So what does your bench look like at this point? And I think it even like Fontecchio in for Stewart, like your bench lineup is pretty good. And Steve T in the chat brings up having Grimes in there in place of Asar Thompson as well, which definitely is an option. And I think either if you have Asar in there, if you have Grimes in there, like those are two pretty good defenders in theory. Grimes should be able to shoot the ball better and create even more spacing for Cade and Ivy. But even if Grimes is coming off the bench, like you have him, Isaiah Stewart, Marcus Sasser, like the bench lineup all of a sudden looks pretty good. And a ton of games, the benches really just came in. The all bench unit that we all love to talk about has really just set everything behind. So maybe Isaiah Stewart off the bench as the backup five is in theory like the simple answer. Maybe it doesn't work as good as we all think it will in practice, but I think it's at least interesting and worth a shot.
All right, just for fun, let me ask you this. Somewhat based off of Steve T's lineup here, he kind of inspired me. If you only care about winning the next game, you know, there's no long-term development concerns, nothing. We just want to win. Could you make an argument that the best, you know, five-man unit they could put out there is, assuming health, Cade Cunningham, Quentin Grimes, Simone Fontecchio, Asar Thompson, Isaiah Stewart?
Oh, man. I'm going to say no, just because I think you need to have Jaden Ivey out there.
I was just curious.
Yeah, which is an interesting one.
Well, the 3-and-D, right?
Yeah.
The 3-and-D.
Yeah, I mean, it lends itself to, like, the spacing and defending discussion that we've had and we know is a priority. But I think you, especially, I know we're talking about just winning the next game, but I think especially in this season, you need to see what you have with Cade and Ivy playing next to each other. We've seen Ivy go through some shooting struggles. He looked good against the Nets, so hopefully that continues. But yeah, I think you have to have him in there and playing a strong amount of minutes. And yeah, I mean, if he's coming off the bench, like he has to get in the game in like 3 or 4 minutes, I think.
For what it's worth, my yes and no answer was going to be like, yeah, if you really only cared about winning tomorrow, that would be the lineup you should use. But you should really not only care about winning tomorrow. There's a lot more at stake at this point when you've only won 10 games on March 7th as of our recording right now. But fun hypothetical. So why not? Thought of bringing it up. This is from Philip Binder. Should be a pretty quick one. Any word on how much longer Quentin Grimes will be out? I haven't heard anything. Don't know if you've heard anything different. You're a lot more connected than me. But, you know, listen, I mean, I know he was practicing. He was getting shots up. But it sounds like it's kind of a knee management thing. He's obviously a little bit more of a long-term asset for this team. It doesn't seem like it's anything to really worry about. He's just getting some extra rest to let it heal up the rest of the way. Do you have a different impression?
No, I mean, to me, it's kind of just like a bummer. I don't know anything. Just going off of what we've all heard, it seems like they're being a bit more cautious with him. Like maybe the knee injury is a bit worse than or not necessarily worse, but is just taking a little bit longer. It's just like a bummer to me because like I want to see him in there, and whether he is like a long-term starter on this team or he is one of those guys that you bring off the bench that really raises your floor defensively of your second unit. And I just want to see more of the shot from him. Like he hasn't had a great year overall, and he had one good shooting game since he's come to Detroit. So I want to see him like string a few more of those together, or at least just see him get some shots up to see if he can really be that 3-and-D, like 2-3 guy that you can plug into the starting lineup or helps you, I guess, build an identity, as cliche as it sounds, in your second unit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, with every lower body injury, you got to bring up that very well could be the reason he's not shooting well right now. If he's not getting the lift that he usually would get on his jumper, or getting that lift takes a different amount of effort and you have to deal with some pain, like all of those things can throw it off. So maybe that's part of it. Who knows? We won't know until he's healthy, and he probably won't get healthy until he gets this rest. So hopefully it's not too long. And it really would be great to see him finish out this season, just to get a little glimpse at what they got. Let's go to this one from our guy, Camille. He says, what is Fontecchio's contract value to you? So I want to spin this into an off-season conversation. Obviously, it sounds like the Pistons are very invested in keeping Simone Fontecchio around. He's going to be a restricted free agent. So what would you value the next contract for him at? Would it look a lot like Isaiah Stewart? More? Less? Where are you at with him?
Yeah, the number and I guess like contract framework that kind of jumped out immediately to me with Fontecchio is a deal similar to what Marvin Bagley had. I don't think, like, I thought that Marvin Bagley was on like a great deal in terms of years. Like, we wanted his money off the books. But if you can get him, and I think that number, like, Bagley was at $12 million a year. I think that number would be inflated a bit just due to the salary cap going up. So that puts him somewhere in like the 15 to 20 range for me. And that number almost gets you like on the higher end is what Bojan was being paid on his contract. So I think the question to me, which like I'm not sure, like I'm leaning towards yes, but I'm debating if he is a $20 million player, which honestly isn't a ton with how crazy the salary cap is getting. But knowing that you're going to have to, like, Cade's extension eligible this summer, you're going to have to pay Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, all your young guys. Eventually, if you're keeping them around, like you want Fontecchio on at least a manageable contract. And that is somewhere in that like 15 to 20 range for me, hopefully on the lower end. If Fontecchio in exchange for maybe getting 3 years guaranteed takes more of a team-friendly deal. So that's where I'm at.
I always find it helpful to think less about the number exactly and think more about how that number relates to the full mid-level exception, all right? Because the salary cap, it keeps rising, and it's going to consistently be rising over the next few years as this new TV money kind of trickles in. The current mid-level exception for this year is about $12.5 million. Next season, it'll be just a touch under 13. So the question I think to ask is Simone Fontecchio a mid-level exception guy? I'm pretty confident that that answer is a no. I think he could probably get more than the mid-level exception elsewhere, you know, outside of Detroit, if the Pistons were to let him go do it. So how much further over that $13 million number is fair to go for Fontecchio? I'm looking at, you know, maybe Isaiah Stewart being a good benchmark. He's in that 16-ish range, but truthfully, I could see it getting a little bit higher than that as well. I mean, maybe Isaiah Stewart, you know, isn't viewed as a long-term bench piece, but the contract that they gave him is a pretty good value for a third big on a good team. So, you know, that the Stewart's already getting paid bench player money. Fontecchio looks like they view him as a bench player as well. So, you know, I could see anywhere between 16 to 20 actually being the number that he gets settled at. And again, guys, you know, with the way that the salary cap's jumping right now over the next few seasons, that's only going to be, you know, if he gets at 20, I believe that's only going to be $5 or $6 million over the mid-level exception by 2026. Like, that's, it sounds like a lot of money, $20 million. It's not going to be a lot of money as we progress through this contract. So for me, anything between that 16 to 20 is absolutely in play. And not only would be in play in Detroit, but would probably be in play most anywhere else he looks. I would be shocked if, you know, it's a Marvin Bagley-esque deal where it's effectively the mid-level exception.
Yeah, and the thing with Fontecchio, which I think might even lend him to getting something in the higher end of a range, we think, is like he has the archetype and the tools that are coveted across the league. Like 3-and-D wings are getting paid like crazy amounts of money. Like, I'm not saying that Fontecchio is in the stratosphere as some of those guys that are getting that type of money, but what he is like valued across the league. So I think you do have to expect that. And again, like, the numbers don't really scare me, because like you said, the salary cap keeps going up and the deals are going to keep going up to follow it. Like, I think Bagley was on an affordable deal relative to the cap, and I'm hoping that they can retain Fontecchio for something similar, but the number is going to be a little bit higher just because things keep going up.
And I just want to bring this up too, because I see a lot of panic in the comments section here, and I know I can feel it. I can feel it for all of you listeners at home too, that $20 million, man, that sounds like a lot of money. And it is a lot of money, but the NBA salary cap next season is going to be $141 million. That's just to like get to, I believe that's just to get to the tax thresholds. Okay. So you could even go above that if you really wanted to. $20 million is 14% of that. Like, it as a percentage, it's not going to be that big. And I don't truthfully think he's going to get to 20. I would expect somewhere between, you know, 16 to 18, I think, is probably the sweet spot. But if it does climb up, like, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's really not that much as a percentage, which is insane.
Yeah.
To me, with how quickly this is all jumping up. But Yeah, gotta adjust our expectations a little bit. The gap just keeps growing.
Yeah.
Inflation.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, lucky for these guys when you're talking about like $20 million deals not being like it being somewhat affordable on an NBA level, like, man, good for these guys. It must be nice.
yeah, absolutely. If only I could get that. Let's go on to this next one here. This is from @13_JMac on Twitter. He says, while I understand the Pistons don't have a ton of legit two-way players, why do you think Monty Williams refuses to mix defense and spacing as best as he?
Yeah, and this ties into it. Monty had a quote, I think it was in a pregame, that our beat reporters mentioned, like, when you're trying to stagger like Cade and Ivy, it goes to, I guess, what you're going to like, who you're going to plug in next to the other. And I guess playing two small guards at the same time, it sounds like he's prioritizing size a decent amount, which sort of lends to not staggering and everything like that. So yeah, it's sort of confusing to me why Troy Brown Jr. is all of a sudden out of the rotation. Like, I think he might be able to be plugged in and sort of like absolve some of these concerns, but the other side of that is shortening the rotation that we also desperately want Monty Williams to do. So yeah, it's a confusing one, and it mixing like defense and spacing, like our starting lineup when you have Stewart, Asar Thompson, and Duren in there, like, isn't doing that. And we just talked about the best starting lineup analytically that will lead to the most wins in theory is inputting Fontecchio for Stewart. And yeah, like, Fontecchio provides the spacing. Stewart's a much better defender, but when Fontecchio comes in, he's not like a total liability on defense like Bojan was. So it's confusing to me. Like, I don't know why he refuses to do it, honestly. Like, I think hopefully he tries things in these last 20 games, but if we've seen anything throughout the whole season, like, I don't know, he's kind of just like sticking to what he's sticking to, and we may not see anything different.
I'm going to give just a little glimmer of hope that I think happened here in that Nets game. And that's that Monty Williams, for all intents and purposes, intended to play nine guys. Just nine. Marcus Sasser really struggled. He's been struggling the past few games. Early in the fourth quarter, for the first backup point guard minutes of the second half, it was Malachi Flynn that got Sasser's spot, just to try and keep things settled while Jaden Ivey was out there and Cade and Jaden were staggered, which is a new thing that's starting to happen now, and that's pretty great. So clearly the intent was a nine-man rotation, and that would be pretty great. That would be pretty great. Now, when Quentin Grimes comes back, is it going to be a situation where, you know, Grimes takes away Fournier's minutes, or do we just add the 10th man? I don't know. But it does seem like in recent games, Monty Williams has not only shortened the rotation down from the 11 and 12 that it was before to at least consistently 10. In this case, the intent was lower. And on top of that, not only are Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey being staggered more often, Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren are also being staggered. Some of that's due to foul trouble, but some of it is intentional. So we're starting to see some of the shifting that all of us fans and analysts have been begging for since the start of the season. We're starting to see it kind of creep in here as the season progresses. And that's really encouraging. All right. Even if you look at the guys that played against the Nets here, all right? Obviously, you have your usual starting lineup, but then the bench was Fontecchio, Fournier, Sasser, and Wiseman. Would it maybe have been better if Troy Brown Jr. was in instead of James Wiseman? Sure, but James Wiseman had a really nice night, so you can't really fault that too much, at least in this case. My only point is, like, the rotations are better. I'll still quibble with the starting lineup, and as long as it stays the starting lineup, I will probably do that the rest of the season. But, you know, compared to where we were, this is night and day better than the situation that the season opened up at, with, you know, Killian Hayes, Ausar Thompson, and Jalen Duren, and Isaiah Stewart all playing together as a four-man unit. Like, this is much, much better. Now we're kind of splitting hairs off the bench. So, hey, you know, a little bit of hope, right? A little bit better.
Yeah, and I think the confusion, like, goes back to those games where we saw 10 guys in the first quarter, like an all bench lineup, and you didn't see Marcus Sasser in those first 10 guys that were in the game for some reason. So, yeah, I think at least we're seeing a little bit better of rotations as well as minutes distribution. Like, all your starters played like crazy high minutes in the win over the Nets. Sasser only had 6 minutes because Malachi Flynn came in. He wasn't really able to get it going. But even like James Wiseman and Evan Fournier played 12 minutes apiece. So I think that's where you sort of want guys like that in your second unit to be at, and give some of those younger guys that are really you're building around and are leading to production when they're in the game, like, just play them close to 40 minutes or however close you can get them, because there's only 20 games left. They should have the ability to do so. And that's just where you see the most production, and staying away from an all five bench lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, look, this hasn't just been this game against the Nets. This has been happening for maybe the past, week and a half. Like, it's recent, but there's a good 3 or 4 games of sample here. And I think the most encouraging part is, you know, Jalen Duren's minutes were low against the Nets due to foul trouble. So Monty Williams very easily could have done what he's done in the past, which would be play your backup center major minutes. But James Wiseman didn't play major minutes. He only played 12. And Isaiah Stewart, for all of the backup center minutes he did get, he only played 31. So, again, like, this has been kind of sort of happening the past 4 or 5 games. And it is a really positive trend. It is a positive trend. Maybe it's not perfect, but, I mean, I'm not the coach, so the coach isn't going to do exactly what I want to do. That's just how this all works. So I'm encouraged by it. I'm really encouraged by it.
Yeah, and like you said, it'll be interesting once Grimes is back, how that changes things. But at least it's not like, yeah, we saw Stewart play the backup five, but only because Jalen Duren was in foul trouble. I'd like to see that in more situations if possible, because it really just doesn't, it minimizes an all bench unit just like sinking what they've been doing, allowing the other team to get out onto runs. The Nets were able to get back into it when the second unit was in. And again, like, with the starters playing, like Cade and Ivy playing close to 40 minutes, Ausar Thompson playing over 40 minutes, it helped them pull it out in the end. I don't think it's like perfect by any means. There's a ton of stuff that they need to clean up. But if you can more like manage the minutes similar to how they were against the Nets, I think it'll put them in better situations at least.
Well, and real quick, I mean, here's the thing, Blake, with this Nets game, right? Jalen Duren, yes, he was in foul trouble, so his minutes were lower. But Jalen Duren still does not consistently get, you know, more than 35 minutes a night. All right, he's still a fairly, for a starter, fairly low-minute starter. It's usually around 31-32. Okay. So he played 30 minutes. So there was maybe 1 to 3 additional minutes that he could have had, mm-hmm. right? That he didn't get. So it's not like there was this massive 12-minute bracket of minutes that James Wiseman filled or that Isaiah Stewart filled in subbing for this foul trouble. Like, Isaiah Stewart has been getting a few minutes for the past 4 or 5 games at the center. Like, that has been, that's been the plan. They've been staggering them a little bit more so that there can be bench units where Asar Thompson is the only non-shooter. And that's pretty exciting. Like, hey, a light bulb went off. They're finally starting to do it. So, you know, let's talk about James Wiseman, because we got one question on James Wiseman, and then I think we'll have to wrap it up because we're about to run long, but that's what we do. This is from Philip Binder again, and it's a pretty good question. James Wiseman had a great night against the Nets. He was really impactful on defense. He scored efficiently. So Philip asks, if James Wiseman keeps playing like he did tonight, do you re-sign him? And let's just make sure we have the stats for him. It's 10 points that he scored. He grabbed 3 rebounds, blocked 1 shot, and was generally more impactful as a rim protector than that 1 block shot indicates, only in 12 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say no. I think if you had any like inkling to re-sign it would have to be for a minimum, but I'm leaning towards no. I feel like you know what James Wiseman is at this point, and I think if not priority one, a very high priority is getting a defensive-minded backup big if Stewart isn't the long-term solution at the backup five. I think even if Stewart is the long-term solution, you still need a defensive-minded guy. Like, Wiseman has showed some flashes on some nights offensively. We've seen him improve a bit as a rim protector, but I just think overall he's not a good defender, and I don't really see that improving very like much in a new deal or anything like that. So I think in the role he's in, you just need to give that roster slot to someone who's going to come in and just be more of a positive defender, like what you're looking for out of that role. Like, just having a defensive minded guy as your backup big on top of, like, relating to all the defensive concerns that we've been discussing from Jalen Duren, I think it's one of the top priorities that this team has to address.
Well, you kind of mentioned it. I do honestly believe that defensive minded backup five, that's already on the roster. That's Isaiah Stewart. I mean, a huge priority for me this offseason would be adding another kind of combo wing forward type that's actually really, really good to push Stewart into that role. Now, look, you know, James Wiseman hasn't been good in Detroit. I think we can all agree on that. He's not been a very good backup center in the minutes he got. I mean, he was beaten out by Mike Muscala even for that backup role before Muscala potentially kind of asked to leave and go elsewhere. If he plays like he did against the Nets, which in his defense, he's played like that before. This isn't the first time that he's flashed really positive rim protection skills for a low usage backup big. You know, throw All-Star, Chris Bosh, whatever your comparison was for him on draft night, throw that out the window. For a big that maybe gets 12 minutes a night, 15 minutes a night, that's not going to shoot a lot and is just going to try and block shots, he's flashed the ability to do that on a few occasions. So if he does it consistently over the last 20 games, like you said, you know, bring him back on a minimum. I know he's technically a restricted free agent. There's no world where they pick up that qualifying offer. It is way, way too high of a number because he was the number 2 overall pick. So treat him like an unrestricted free agent. If he wants to stick around and the Pistons, you know, think that he played well enough as a defender to be a break glass in case of emergency, third center on your roster, just in case someone gets hurt. Yeah, absolutely. Keep him around. You know, he seems like he's, by all counts, he's a great guy, good kid, hard worker, teammates love him, all that stuff. So I think he has a chance to prove himself, to prove that he should stick around. I don't know if he will, but look, if he's gonna be consistent over the last 20 games as a defender, as a shot blocker, and as a rebounder, and you know, make the occasional dunk every now and then, yeah, sure, keep him on the minimum. That'd be just fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if he was that like break glass in case of emergency center, like I would like someone that was at least a bit more known as a defender. Like I'm almost okay just giving up a bit on the offensive side, just because I think defense in that slot has been such a problem overall. So I would lean towards trying to go and get someone else. But if he is like all that's there, which is sad to say, like I guess a minimum is fine, but I hope they go in another direction, at least for that third center, if it ends up being a second center, whatever it is.
Well, we're kind of answering different questions at the same time, right? Because, you know, if we assume that James Wiseman is consistent as a defender over the last 20 games, then I say, yeah, okay, re-sign him. Do I expect him to be consistent as a defender over the last 20 games? No, I don't. I really don't. He hasn't been consistent all season. So, you know, like directly, Philip, to your question, like if he's going to do it, if he proves himself, definitely third center, love it. Keep him around. How realistic is that? Gosh, I don't know. Probably not all that realistic at all. And since we are talking on free agents, you know, I wanted to bring back up the numbers because I did get more detail on it. So the salary cap, $141 million. The luxury tax kicks in at $171 million. And then your first apron above that is $178.5 million. Your minimum team salary, which is exactly what it sounds, it's the total salary that the team has to have on the book when the season starts, $127 million. And the Pistons have so much cap space, Blake.
Yeah.
So much cap space. So if you're telling me as the 15th guy to get, you know, to get to a number in total cap that is acceptable, that you bring James Wiseman back as your emergency option, I might have convinced myself. They're going to need to sign so much cap, man. They need to give out so much money this offseason, and it's going to be hard with this free agent class. It's going to be hard.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope there's someone else out there, even if it's like a vet towards the end of the and to the end of their career. Like, I think that was kind of the idea of, I mean, just bringing Taj Gibson in a 10-day, like, I just think that hasn't really been addressed. And I think that's one of the priority. I don't know if a ton of cap will come out of it. I think you need to look elsewhere first. But I mean, it seems like this front office believes in Wiseman. So if they do and they can get him on a minimum and they have nothing else, sure. But I think there's better options that they can go to potentially with the roster spot that he would fill.
Yeah, definitely. And even second round pick options as well, which is something we'll probably start to explore here in the coming weeks as the season starts to wrap up. Blake, this was great. The Pistons got a win. We're in double digits.
Yeah. It was fun to record after a win. And yeah, a win that got us to double digits on March 7th when we only have 20 games left. So hopefully they can string a few more together.
Hey, but look. We were asked early on during that 28 game losing streak if the Pistons would even get to this point by the end of the year. And we sat there and we said, guys, I don't know.
Yeah, very true.
And they did it, Blake.
Very true.
They did it.
Good for them. Hopefully they can get a few more to get past whatever that magic number is. I think it's 13, right? For like the worst record.
Yep.
Okay, well, hopefully they...
Oh, no. They already passed the worst ever record.
So oh, yeah, that one was in like a shortened season. So, yeah, hopefully yep. they can at least... Who knows? Try to get to 15. I feel like that's a good number to shoot for, play for something, but...
Not the number one pick anymore either.
I know.
By the way.
And which it'll be okay. There'll be interesting guys on the board no matter wherever they are selecting. So yeah, can't wait for that discussion to happen too if they string a few more wins together. But special thank you to Sean Corp, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting this show. And shout out to you guys for the great questions and talking points tonight. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you.